Aisha, and I'm a former host of Mocha Single Mothers by Choice, or SMCs. Like you, as an SMC, I decided to become a mother knowing I'd be the sole care provider and parent for my children, at least at the outset. The Mocha stood for Black, so I'm using the word Black, and I'll be discussing being a single mother by choice from a Black woman's lens. You'll connect with all the interesting and fun things about this non-traditional path, like discussing which sperm to use and some hard truths about fertility and the realities of dating as a single mother who doesn't have a co-parent to rely on occasionally, and what it's actually like to parent as an S&C. This is the Black Single Mothers by Choice podcast.
Hi, everyone. My name is Michelle. I just turned 50. And
hey, congratulations.
Thank you. It's fun turning 50 in a pandemic, but made the best of it. I have a 7-year-old son, Aiden. He just turned 7 last week, and we moved overseas when he was about 2. When I was deciding to have Aiden by myself, I talked to a few friends who are in the Foreign Service, and I'm in the Foreign Service, so I work for the U.S. Agency for International Development. And they all said, you're not going to be able to afford a baby in D.C. You need to move. You need to join the Foreign Service and you need to leave. I was like, but I don't want to leave my family. Really close to my family, even though they live in Michigan, we're like ridiculously close. Mm-hmm. She says, well, you can come back when he turns 5 and when he's in elementary school. For those early days, you need the help. I said, okay. Told my sisters. And they're like, oh, but I don't want you to leave. You just had the baby. And I said, I can't afford to stay here. And they said, move to Michigan. I said, no, I'd rather be on welfare in D.C. than move to Michigan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, not my favorite place, but it's because of the weather mostly. Yeah, I applied to the Foreign Service and was accepted in about, so I moved 2.5 years after Aiden was born. And we moved first to Zimbabwe. And I think within a month of being there, I said, I am not moving back to America until Aiden finishes high school.
Okay, so I miss you. And I agree with your sisters. I'm like, don't go. And I was just really sad when you made the decision to leave the U.S., but I totally understood. Now, I'm going to put a period on that and pin it just for now. And so can you take us back through your process? So you started out by telling your family, how did you conceive Aiden? What's your story there from the SMC journey perspective?
Okay. Ooh. So it started in therapy when I was 35 and I was back and forth hemming and hawing. And my therapist said that you have to make a decision on this. So she said, by the end of the summer, this was like in April or May. She said, by the end of the summer, you need to make a decision. So I made the decision to not do it at that time. And fast forward to when I was actually trying to conceive, I wish I had tried then. But then at the end of the day, if I would not have this wild and crazy child I have now.
Right.
And so then I started looking at the prices, what it would cost and what I could afford. And I think when I was 39, 40, I started really looking at it. And so I ended up having a short-term assignment in Kenya. And so I was in the midst of doing all my research. And then they said, we need you to go to Kenya for 6 months, just help support their elections. So I immediately switched my research from America to Kenya. And I found out that there was an IVF clinic there. And they did sperm donors. And so did all of the testing. My ovarian reserve was low. I had a very unlikely chance that I would get pregnant. But the doctor said, you never know what plans God has for you. So do IVF. They do egg retrieval, unmedicated. Yeah, it was nothing compared to my...
My contractions were
nothing compared to the egg retrieval. And I heard that later. They told me to take Panadol, which is the international equivalent of Tylenol. Take 2 Tylenol before you come. And I was in there calling on Jesus, the ancestors.
Oh, hi.
And I was trying to like reshift my mind. So like it's on ultrasound. And so you can see the doctor take this little tiny thread. Now, for as small as it is, you'd think it wouldn't hurt. So I'm watching, but then he goes in and he suctions out the eggs and you feel each one go.
And oh my.
Kenyan nurses and possibly a lot of other African countries have nurses that don't understand all the noise I was making there. They were looking at me like, you're being ridiculous. And I'm like, you do it then. By the end of it, I just had tears running down my face. And I was like, this is horrible. But they got 9 eggs. And so they created the embryos. I think only they don't do 5-day there. So they only do 3-day. And the quality of the eggs, I think he transferred 3 embryos. Because I had 1B and 2Cs and everything else was, he didn't think I would get pregnant either. He said, if even one takes, it'll, so I didn't get pregnant. And then he said, maybe we can move on to an egg donor. So we tried that and that didn't work. And so I was like, I was getting ready to go back to the US, like, let me figure it out there. So I take all my paperwork back and I go to Shady Grove and I was like, do you want to run the blood test again? Maybe they got it wrong. She was like, I'm not going to waste your time with another blood draw. These numbers, mm-hmm. I would suggest you go the donor egg route. And so with that, and I didn't process it. I was like, I want a baby. This is what I have to do. I had mm-hmm. gone through so much.
And so how old were you at this point? Because we are also trying to make donor egg more approachable to Black women. So yeah. How old were you at the time you made the decision to move to donor egg?
2013. So when I was in Kenya, he suggested, and I was like, okay, worth a try. My goal, my dream was to breastfeed. And I was like, whatever I have to do to breastfeed, I don't know where the egg came from. I don't know. I don't care where the sperm came from. I want to carry a baby and I want to breastfeed. So the other things did not matter much to me.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
41, going on 42. I'm thinking how old I was in 2013. When I came back to the US, then I started looking for sperm donors and egg donors and had the hardest time. So I thought I had finally found the match. And then they sent me to Burundi for 6 months. And I had to cancel the match, go to Burundi for 6 months. So it's complicated. So I've been working for the same agency since 2005.
What would you tell other moms like with regards to the whole process of doing that and why you chose that process?
So I chose that process because the opportunity just presented itself, to be honest. I don't have a master's degree. And so most foreign service jobs, they want a master's degree. So this one came out that did not require it. And I said, okay, I'll apply. There's also the fact of I know how life is and I was a little afraid of moving, so that cocoon of being under the American embassy. And it made a softer landing for me. But I've talked to other people. I was actually talking to another woman. She's here. She's a single mother. And she was saying that you can work for non-governmental organizations as a foreigner and get almost the same types of services. You'll have housing that either they'll pay for, they'll reimburse you for. Some of the larger non-governmental organizations will pay for schooling. So that's another factor. Aiden's school is paid for. So in terms of expenses, I think one way or the other is probably the easiest way to go. I know I've heard that there are a lot of women that leave the US and come to Nigeria with or without kids and start up businesses or do consulting. I don't know how easy it is. Some countries have less restrictive practices for expatriates mm-hmm. Working in the country. Others have much more restrictive practices. I know South Africa can be challenging if you want to go there and just set up a company. But if you want to work for an organization, or there are even some international accounting firms there, those are ways to do it. And other things to think of is the cost of living. The education system. the likelihood of conflict or violence breaking out. And there was one other thing I was thinking of. Ease of getting around, ease of adjusting to the local culture. Some places are easier than others. West Africa seems to have its own vibe, its own rules, and very different from my experiences on the rest of the continent.
Michelle, quick question. I know, so you took Aiden at about 2, 2.5. So that was about 2017. Okay, so that was when politically the U.S. was changing and certain frictions were starting to manifest itself. Did any of that play a role into you choosing to take Aiden out of the country? And then did it factor into which country you chose to raise your son in his formative years?
I had already been accepted into the Foreign Service. And, you know, that summer before the election, you could see where things were going. And I started thinking, okay, maybe this is, yeah, this is, everything was coming together telling me that this is not the place you want to be with your little Black boy. I remember I was in language training and I was at the Foreign Service Institute and we were in the cafeteria and it was the day after the election. Aisha remembers it. So when you join the Foreign Service, you join as part of a class. And so I saw a few of my classmates there. They were taking other languages. And so we go over and one woman is just distraught. She didn't have her contacts on. She looked awful. Some of the other people are just like shaking their heads. They can't believe it. And then they look at me and they said, how are you doing? And I just burst out crying. I said, I can't raise my son here. They're going to kill my son. And at that precise moment, it seemed like the entire cafeteria stopped talking. So my voice was louder and I could hear it echoing. And I was just like, oh God. But it was how I felt. I was just like, I can't stay here. I had already stopped watching the news probably around August because even watching the news impacted how I interacted with my son. I had a shorter temper and I was just, I just can't, this is not healthy for me or for him. And I wanted him to grow up. I wanted him to be a kid. And I definitely feel like he has that here. As far as with the Foreign Service, you don't get to choose per se, you get to say your preferences. And my preference was Africa, preferably anywhere except French speaking Africa, because I did not want to learn French. So they told me a few places. They told me Zimbabwe and Malawi. And I'd always wanted to come to Zimbabwe. For some reason, I had it in my mind early on that Mugabe was a great person. He probably was in the beginning, but then they snatched that away from me and said, you're going to Malawi. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll go wherever. I just wanted to be in Africa because when I've been here, before I had Aiden, children are so important and so valued here. And they walk on water. I, to this day, if I discipline him, people are like, oh, leave the boy alone. And so turns out I ended up going to Zimbabwe. It was the greatest thing ever. He grew up, he speaks a little Shona. He is very intelligent. And I think the schools had a lot to do with that.
And so he's just a little boy, right? He's not a little Black boy.
He's a little boy.
Yes, a little boy. Can you tell us a little bit about how you handled childcare before he was school age? And then what was your experience logistically with the schools?
So before we went, I looked for some preschools because he's a social child. And so I didn't want him to be at home with a nanny. So I hired a nanny housekeeper. And she had never worked as a nanny. She was mostly a housekeeper, but she had and has unbreakable bond with him. So I felt safe for when the times he wasn't in school, he was with her. So I found a preschool that was logistically, it was challenging. It was the opposite way from the office, but I would drop him off in the morning and then I'd go pick him up in the afternoon and people understood. Eventually I found a driver and so he would do that pickup and drop off. But I found a school that really nurtured him. I've been really lucky. It's not this rote learning. They care. They hug the kids. It's like a family. It's like sending your child to grandma's house. Or they look out for each other. And the kids form this bond. And they help each other. It's what I remember when I was growing up. But the logistics, some schools have buses. This school did not. The school Aiden went to later, the embassy provided a bus.
So Michelle, we hear a lot of romanticizing about Blacksit. I want to leave the U.S. I want to flee the U.S. and then I'm going to go and I'm going to have this U.S. lifestyle in a foreign country. Can you tell us a little bit about the challenges, tell us a little bit about the challenges as an American living in a foreign country and then as a Black SMC navigating a foreign country?
In some places, people aren't sure what I am here mostly. They're not even sure I'm Black.
Uh-oh. See, that would be my hard part in Africa. I've been it. I went to college in South Africa for a bit and it was a challenge.
Yeah.
Questioning of Blackness.
Yeah. Nigeria is a little different because there are people who look like me who are Nigerian. Their hair is red. There's that. And it's hilarious. So I feel like I'm less having to explain that I am Black here than I did in Zimbabwe or South Africa. You're not considered Black, even if you say it, you're considered colored, which is not seen in the same way as it is in the US. So there is a distinction there. I had to learn that. So being an American is weird because a lot of times you are treated extra special because you're American. I have been standing in lines and people will say, no, mama, come, you don't stand there, you don't wait. And it's very uncomfortable, but like, they're like pressuring you to go to the front of the line. It's this sense that they don't want to inconvenience the foreigner, particularly an American woman or a foreign woman. I've seen that in a few different places. As a Black SMC, I get the same look of shock and awe that I do in America. You did what by yourself? So you mean he really has no dad? And I said, nope. No dad. And then more and more women are starting to say, African women are starting to say, wow, maybe that's something I need to consider, which is huge because there is still a stigma for being a single parent in Africa. And it doesn't matter how rich you are, there is still that stigma. So it's from women, I get respect from men.
So in our group, we talk a lot about building a village. And for some, it's even challenging building a village here in the U.S. How did you go about building your village there? And what's some advice you would give to SMCs who go abroad and are looking to build a village where they're at?
This might sound a bit unbelievable, but it organically happens. People found out I was a single mother and it was, do you need help? Let me help you. I think the bigger challenge was for me to say yes. What is helpful being overseas, to be honest, Aisha was my village in DC, but she was still 30 minutes away. That was without traffic. You live in a closer proximity to people here. And particularly where I am now, there are a lot of Black American women in the embassy community. And for example, both here and when I was in Zimbabwe, when it was time for Aiden's birthday, my circle was diverse, Black and white women, African uncles, African aunties. When it was time for his birthday, they knew I wanted to do it big. They're like, what can I bring? What do you need me to do? Calm down. It will be okay. When I decided at the last minute to have a party for Aiden, they're like, what do you need? I said, I don't know what I need. They said, what do you have? I said, I have meat and I have pizza. Okay. I'll bring Kool-Aid, I'll bring a pasta salad, I'll bring a cucumber salad. And they showed up and they showed out and they just took care of everything. They made sure everything was set up. They made sure I ate. And it was like, this is what I did not have in the DC area because we're spread out all over. And just the logistics of getting from DC to Woodbridge on a Sunday, it's an hour. Yeah. Maria's our nanny. She was with us 4 years in Zimbabwe. She came to Nigeria. Sometimes I get emotional talking about her because she knows exactly what to do every time. Mm. We have a problem with Ada being very cranky and mean in the morning. Oh. she devises this plan for me to go hide in another room. And she will tell him, I've gone to work. And he gets up and goes. And so I thought maybe we were over that. And then he started doing it again here. And she says, she calls me my Aiden. My means mother in Shona. And so she calls me my Aiden. And most people call me, have started calling me that here. She says, my Aiden, I think you need to go hide again. And so I get up in the morning, the alarm goes off, and I go hide in the other bedroom, and she gets him ready. She knows how to distract him. I literally could not do this without her. The idea of finding a new nanny, I didn't know what to do because she matches so perfectly with him.
Thank you for sharing that. And I think that there is absolutely a gift of inviting people to be part of your village, inviting people to help nurture a child. And I think when people extend the offer of how can I help you, it almost comes with an implied, please let me help you. And so that just warms my heart. And the whole conversation is making me teary. What bit of advice would you give to SMCs who are planning to exit the U.S.? What are some things that you wish you had known then that you know now that you can impart as some advice?
Do your planning, do your research, but don't make a plan. Be open for anything because anything can happen. Have a plan for how you would leave if things got dangerous in the country and you had to leave. Because there are times where the American Embassy can help you, but they will expect you to pay to be flown out. So having enough money for those things, look at internet. How strong is the internet? Are you able to talk to people back home? It's one of the things that's important since we go home every 6 months. We spend a lot of time on FaceTime or WhatsApp talking to family so they see each other. So, you know, especially if you leave with a younger child and you go back, they're not afraid of Gran and Auntie Shell, they know who you look like. Be open, be flexible. I think that's the biggest thing, be flexible. And don't have any expectations. People will help you. People will always help you in Africa. I've not had a situation where I didn't stop and say, I'm lost, how do I get here? Or how do I do this? How do I fix this? That someone has not said, I know a guy, I know somebody. It really is. If you think about how we grew up in the U.S. with this sense of community and the neighborhood looked out for the neighborhood can be a whole country at times. Have your guard up a little bit, but let people help you. And flexibility is key.
Well, Michelle, thank you for that awesome advice. And thank you for taking a time from overseas to have this conversation with me.
Full Pod, thank you so much for taking the time to listen. If you like what you've heard, please share this podcast with your girlfriends, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about the topics covered in this episode. So email me at mochasmc@gmail.com. If you found value in the topics covered, consider making a donation using the link in the show notes below. Till next time, Pod. Bye now.